Thanks for tuning in to Jin and Tantra. In this episode, we continue our dive into the world of Taoism, and specifically the nine things that can fuck up your life, as we lovingly call them. In this episode, we discuss reveling in the clarity of one's mind, using specific tools to coalesce one's rampant thoughts and a mythical formula of invocation. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Jin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes Tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicineism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail. Your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, fellow GNTers, those of us who like our spirituality with a twist. So we're doing nine things that could fuck up your life.
That's right.
Taoist obstacles. And we got into number five, which was kind of an interesting one, being we took the emphasis on being plagued by self-inflicted suffering. There's another one that is another part of it, which is just having life kind of kick your ass, which we did talk about last week, too. We got into a certain amount of time talking about being plagued by self-inflicted suffering. And I tried to make it kind of personal in last week's episode, basically going, OK, well, I'm getting my ass kicked. And so here it is. And so I'm in the midst of this, which I guess is a theme that we've been talking about on this podcast for a while, that spirituality now is going to involve people being open, sharing in this way. This is the time, you know?
Eric, let me read this passage real quick just to give people the reminder.
For sure.
Because there's one other part in here that I like to always blame myself or others. So it's fun for me to be able to use that. Anyways, it says, in your youth, you were unwilling to cultivate, and in old age, you continue to injure your spirit. Even when you lose your vitality and become ill, your mischievous mind still refuses to wake up. Or you were born into hardship and were doomed to suffer all of your life, being plagued by self-inflicted suffering and crushed by difficult livelihood. This is the fifth obstacle. And the part for me that really kind of sticks out is the unwilling to cultivate and the continuation of injuring one's spirit. You know, it's a conscious effort to be unconscious, essentially.
Interesting point. So you're saying it does enough damage that it actually costs you more to be unconscious. And there's almost a little bit of like cutting off your nose to spite your face or something like
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went to it when I first read it. And then like last week, it ended up being a time to talk about it. Though, things seem to be better in the life of your humble podcast host, this guy.
Wonderful.
So fingers definitely crossed and hoping for all the best of things, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone super dear to my heart. But in any case, you know, it was really kind of going to the idea of like, okay, what does it mean to like have your mind torment your mind?
Mm.
And then we got to the point of really trying to talk about like, what do you do about that?
Yeah.
And we talked through a few things. You know, I jotted down my ideas of things that I've partially things I've done before, things that are in the tradition that you could do. So we talked about this idea about cutting off the negative thoughts, like you're swinging a sword, and you went pretty deep into like the visualization of that thing.
Yeah. And this weekend we had me and Christian, who was on the podcast before, who was a student of yours, another fellow acupuncturist, who will be on again. We did a men's retreat in New Buffalo, Michigan, or Indiana. Oh. I don't know where it is. It's nearby. It's not far. Uh-huh. It's not far from Chicago.
Buffalo, Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's right. It's in the Midwest, and it's about an hour from where we live. And we rented a nice place and had about a half a dozen guys who came out and we're working on this stuff. And where the conversation that we had last time was really a springboard for what I ended up sharing with them technique-wise on how to work with their
thinking. That's interesting. So you were talking about some of the exact same kinds of techniques.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And cool. One of the things that really came up, because we wanted to share, I want to see if something come up. So Eric and I were talking about with how much I'm going to share from my men's weekend on the podcast before we started recording, and I said nothing. And then of course, as we're talking, something came. And so, in the spirit of being vulnerable, it's a unique position to kind of be in as the transmitter, of this information to other people, which at that time, meaning when I'm on retreat and I'm the sort of meditation leader, if you will, in this or I don't know, transmitter, I don't know a better way to put it.
A
I
facilitator,
was
maybe, or something. I don't.
facilitator, sure. However, however you want to look at it. It is that like in the settings that I have been taught, and in many of the settings that Eric, you have been taught, there is a bit of a hierarchy, a little bit, or like an inherent reverence, even if you don't know that person personally. It's just there. But in these settings, they're far more informal, and in my opinion, this sort of forces the barriers to be sort of shattered a little bit, because you're all in the same things, and people want to relate to other people, in my opinion. We were talking a little bit about this earlier. And the beautiful part about that is that people will share, and in a normal setting, it's a question and answer. One person asks a question, one person answers, and then that's kind of the end of it. And not everybody shares, and whatever. But in this setting, it's kind of intentional. You go around the circle and ask people to share, and somebody, and I forgot the exact wording, but I remember my response to it, and they were talking about being like a lifelong student, but this person is older than I am by at least 10, 12 years, And in that moment, it awoken a deep thought in me that like really like brought something up. And I said, this is the first moment that I realized that my passion for learning may outlast this body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I've never had a thought like that. A thought that ex that like or a feeling, you know what I'm saying? And then look, there's people who we have in our life and who we love, and we believe that we'll love them beyond the body, but that's an extension outside of myself, at least I can say for me. But in this case, this was an extension that wasn't attached to anything else. I guess I could say it's a desire, if we want to call it. It's in a not so good way to learn that doesn't seem to have an end.
Well, I mean, what could be more beautiful than that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was one of these things that was brought upon after a long, probably an hour long kind of group meditation. And for an hour is not necessarily a long period, it's not a long sitting, but for people who have meditation practices of 0 minutes a day or maybe 10, an hour is very long,
Yeah, it's very difficult for a person to do that, to be honest. You're
Yeah,
shocked.
and then after that, you are in a much more clear state, much clearer state. And so the things that they were sharing were on a far deeper level, way beyond the mundane of like, oh, my back was hurting me. They're not, that wasn't there. And so when he said that, that awoken, or that had awakened that piece of me that was just so awesome.
Maybe just it's this, we both kind of have the little of this thing. It's that spontaneity of that thought just appearing like in the moment
Yes.
in an unforced way that's like shocking, you know?
Yes.
I remember like having like they have this bodhicitta thought, which is like, I'm going to try and improve myself so I can help others. It's just a thought.
Yeah.
But when it really hits you super hard, that could be a moment in your life. I remember thinking like, I'm working on myself, okay, trying to get my own shit together with the ultimate intention, I'm going to help others. That's what this is. Boom. And you're
Yeah.
like, okay, is that when you tell it to somebody, they'll be like, okay, well, that's cool. But like when you really have that feeling, that spontaneous feeling in yourself, and it's so clear and so strong, something again, you would say probably like beyond theory or something like that. It doesn't like
Absolutely.
you read in the book, it occurred to you spontaneously inside of yourself.
Yeah.
That's a deep thing. I guess that's part of what this little whole podcast project is about when we talk about it in this meta way, which is, you know, we're taking these ideas and we're trying to own them, right? That spirituality as far as we're going here, right? That's the twister. Yeah. To own it. And so, like, I think I have owned this idea that I'm trying to work to learn beyond this lifetime. I've owned that idea. Like, I am kind of comfortable with the idea, like, okay, I'm learning things now, and that will carry forward as this being called Eric ceases to be, but something else continues on, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there is something when it's not theory, when it's like that spontaneous moment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I totally there was it. There was a time that, you know, I don't think I've ever, I've shared this with you, Eric, but I don't think I've shared it on the podcast before. You know, people know that I've worked in legal settings with, plant medicines, of course, you know, outside of this country and in all the places that it's totally doable and following all the local laws and regulations. Just in case I run for Congress, I got to leave all of my doors open. you know, but there was a point in which, you know, look, sometimes these things are uncomfortable, just like long meditation sessions can be very uncomfortable. You're going to deal with some obstacles, but they're there probably intentionally, you know, to help you to like work through them, to understand that like the yin, the compression aspect of the practice, the tighter that squeeze, inevitably on the other side, the larger the release. You know, that's just the kind of accordion effect of doing almost anything of significance, how it goes. And I'm not going to go into it because it was a long experience, but I'm not going to go into all of it. But basically, at the point at which I felt and was most uncomfortable, and this was hours of agony, hours and hours of absolute agony, I was questioning what is the purpose of my mortality? Why am I going to return to the body that I don't want to be in anymore? And I thought of, you know, people who would be hurt if I was to leave, you know, my partner, my mom, that's basically all that I could think of.
Sort of like an intense plant medicine experience, right?
Yeah.
I'm
glad you did. Yeah.
Make it absolutely clear, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know what you're talking about. It's we had a lot of conversations about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a deeply transformative set of experiences for you.
Absolutely. Because I was at this point, I was completely, I didn't have an identity. I wasn't a person. There was nothing left to hold on to. It were just, I don't know, some magnetic force, you know, in a between state, if you will. And I was like, well, I can't go back to that, you know, and I can't be guilted into coming. I realized that guilt could do that, you know, or like feeling of wanting to please someone else or not wanting them. Compassion, I guess you could probably say, you know, but it was like maybe more empathy because you were directing it towards some particular people. But that didn't do it. That didn't do it. And I had hoped that it would make, okay, you're right. You know what? I'm going to do this for old Jimmy, you know, and I'm going to, you know, whatever. But I didn't care about old Jimmy.
Old Uncle Pete, I'm coming back. Yeah,
I'm coming back, Uncle Pete, and we're going to go watch baseball games. You know, like that didn't do it, you know. And these are the two deepest, some of the deepest relationships of my life, you know, my partner and my mother, you know. I didn't do it. And as I'm sitting in this, you know, really uncomfortable state for a very long period of time, totally dissociated, I, at some point, it just, you know, Omani Padme Hum came to me. And I just continue to repeat this mantra over and over and over again. And if you want to give the I don't know the exact translation of it, because it's just like inside of me.
Boy, I don't know if I fully know the exact translation of it either, which I probably should.
Probably should.
I've had my own. Oh, it's something about like, well, you know, if I fuck it up, I'll feel embarrassed.
No, that's okay.
I have a feeling of what I think it is, but if I say it wrong, I'll feel like the shame.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But you know, it's like it's a praise to the
Abhagateshvara. It's Chengrezi.
Yeah, yeah. It's transforming the impurities of the body, speech, and mind to the mind of a Buddha, and it's like the most common kind of
Well, no, that we can talk about. I mean, what it's about. It's
yeah.
Stop a compassion, right?
Love yeah. Compassion. It's a compassionate mantra. That's the most famous.
Exact, like, I feel like I know what it means, like verbatim, but I feel bad if I fuck it up.
Yeah. But it, you know,
it's like not try to do that, but I feel like I know, but anyways,
it's said to give people positive effect in their life.
Specifically for like love and compassion, as opposed to like the Manjushri one, which is more for wisdom, you know, and you like both like Manjushri too, like both of these, what's not to like?
Yeah, love exactly. So, but
like, why not to like
it? It's kind of like the, Our Father Who Art in Heaven of the Buddhist world, in my opinion, you know, like.
Yeah, it's the one that you'll hear most in the Tibetan Buddhist world, right? Yeah. Where they'll do the Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum.
Yeah.
They'll put it on like a bumper sticker or something.
Yeah.
I had a car and something, like kind of all over the place.
So this mantra just came out of nowhere, essentially, and I started saying it. And then I had this deep like rush of motivation to come back and help teach people, to help heal people, to you know what I'm saying? Like, and I was like, and then I literally said out loud, and it's a very long, convoluted story, but like I was sitting naked in a bathtub at this point. And I
remember this part of the story.
Yeah. And I said,
it wasn't like in a good time way. It wasn't like, I'm barely holding my shit together. I'm in this bathtub.
Right. I'm in this bathtub.
All my body and mind down.
Yeah. Correct. And basically I was in the bathtub because, I felt like if I died, at least they could wash my body in the tub and they wouldn't have to like clean my excrement and urine up off the floor as a grown man. You know, I was concerned about embarrassing myself and the people around me if I was not able to come back. So I was fearful enough that I decided to take the bathtub option. You know what I'm saying? But that the motivation,
say like cleanliness is next to godliness. That's what they say.
But this mantra came, and the feeling of like that bodhisattvic ideology of giving more than you take, you know, essentially came through. And I said, okay, I can get with that. I can do this, and I can do it for that reason, but for no other reason other than that. I cannot, there's nothing else. There's nothing personal that I want to accomplish. There's nothing, there's no thing that can hold me here. No person that can hold me here, but that motivation is real. And then I fixated my attention on that motivation until I basically like pulled myself back together.
I mean, that's deep, Daniel. And thanks for sharing that thing. You know, that's been a conversation that we had going on some years ago, right? When you went through these experiences, and it's been, And as we were talking, like before we got on these mics, it was okay. Part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to put ourselves in vulnerable places, you know, to talk about how we tried to do these things for real. And that's what we're doing. So for sure. Yeah. Thanks, man. So I guess what I would add to the list of techniques within that is probably mantra. Cause we were trying to walk through things that you could use. Like, what do you do when your mind is fucking with you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in this case, you know, it was even like more than that for you. You were going to something really deep. But in a certain sense, you had to deal with what your mind was doing, right?
Yes. Yep.
Spirit was doing. And that was part I was going to get to here, this idea that you can use mantra. And sometimes for me, in my experience with this, it's been mantras that, and this is all the stuff I was doing, right?
Yeah.
They can be mantras that you have some special initiation into or something, right? And, you know, we have those kinds of things. And some of those I have a real deep feeling about. Some of those mantras are really kind of important to me. They're what you call like more highest yoga tantra things, where you wouldn't just kind of talk about them in an episode and just share them because they're not considered to be full access or something like that. And I try to respect the tradition in that sense. But Om Mani Padme Hung, Om Tara Tu Tara Tu Re Soha, Om Rapazana Di, those are like kind of like out in the public domain.
Yeah.
It's not like Mickey Mouse where like you have to pay Disney. Like I still can't get fucking Mickey Mouse in the public domain, can they?
Not yet. They changed something.
I don't know. They changed the laws. So Mickey Mouse will never go in the public domain for Walt Disney. But anyways, that's nothing to do with these mantras. It just popped in my head. But when you look at it, you know, some of these mantras, you know, they're not like some special initiatory thing. And so if you haven't tried that, that's worthwhile trying too. If your mind is being a little torturous with you, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Tara Tu Tara Tu Re Soha, Tara's mantra, Avalokiteshvara's mantra, those are like things. And then it's a, you know, some people had like kind of funny reactions to this. You know, we like Brad Warner and we want to get him on here at some point. He's one of the Zen guys. And he always kind of blasts these mantras a little bit, like you're just kind of like suppressing your negative thoughts or something. And he kind of takes a, I guess, a somewhat negative attitude towards them. But that hasn't been my experience at all. I think they have a lot of power and they do powerful things in the moment. And it is a way of like, you put your mind into the mantra and it doesn't have the space to fuck with you. That's correct. True. But it's also that the those things have a certain, you know, healing power to them. Right. So, I mean, it's another thing we could buy, you know, if we were making this episode prior, like, what do you do when you're in the thick of things, right?
Yes.
When you're in the midst, that's another one that was sort of on the list to cover. And you kind of just went into it just kind of naturally in the flow of things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that case, it just, I mean, you knew the mantra already, but obviously it spoke to you like, you know, in the moment, right?
So, yeah, it arose naturally.
Yeah, and it goes, I guess, in our Carl Jung episodes, that gets to the idea like these mantras are both internal and external things.
Mm-hmm.
They're representatives of parts of our own psyche and mind in some archetypal way, but they're also like forces of the universe or something, right?
Yeah.
They're energetic propensities in the universe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can, so Andre told me that mantra also can, you could translate mantra as mind protector.
That, yeah, that's how I learned it too. I was like, yeah, exactly that. Exactly. Yep. We're 100% simpatico on that. Yeah. When I first learned that, I was like, oh, okay, I see. Because that's true. It's trying to protect the mind, right?
Yes. Yes. And yeah. And so, you know, and I'm looking up mantra and, you know, Merriam-Webster, in terms of dictionaries, Merriam-Webster is still the best, just in case for people who are, you know, looking things up. But I love this. I love this. It says the meaning of mantra is a mystical formula of invocation or incantation. And when I teach the, you know, when I speak about shamanism, I always say that words are incantations. And people say, well, why is that? I say, because you spell words. I.e. one is casting a spell when you use them.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the pun at first.
Yeah.
The deep pun, the deeper pun.
The deep pun, right. Deeper and pun. So, you know, it's a mystical formula of invocation, meaning that like as things arise naturally, the, you know, we call it the vibration or the current of that mantra, whatever it's associated with, love, compassion, or wisdom, or, you know, healing, comes up and out through you via the mantra. I talked about this a lot at the mentor retreat this weekend, actually, about like, you know, how to use it and the importance of it. And we've never talked about this, so maybe this is the time to do it. But, mm-hmm. You know, a very famous kind of meditation is known, and currently modern, is known as transcendental meditation.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to dunk on people. I'm not going to yuck someone's yum, as we like to say here. You know, however, I can say for those who don't know what transcendental meditation is, just very briefly, I'll do it, Eric, if you want, or if you want to do it.
No, please do it. Because I don't feel like I have expertise enough to talk about this. You know what I mean? I never practiced it. So
yeah.
I'll abstain from comment just because I just don't know if I know enough.
You know? I've had a couple clients who've gone and friends who've gone through the training. So I've had some in-depth conversations with them or what they were willing to share with me about it. Let's put it like this. I've not done the training myself, but from what I'm aware of, you do the training and I don't know exactly what happens in the training, but at the end result is this practice, 2 20-minute sessions a day using a mantra, but that mantra doesn't have any meaning. I don't know what the words are, you know, maybe that's part of the secret part, but it's, you know, babbly blah, 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 or, you know, whatever, red dog, cat, run. I don't know what the mantra is.
Well, you know, mantras are, just to like interject just for a second, because I mean, like, but, you know, this happened to me when I was first learning, like chanting the Buddha Sutras, and they say a lot of weird shit in there, you know? So sometimes there'll be words that'll have meaning. Sometimes they don't have meaning. Sometimes they're just there for sound. And I didn't mean to interrupt your flow of doing it, but it's just interesting because when you go to figure out what they actually mean, sometimes it's very odd when you read them, you know.
Yes.
Fire, fire, howl, the wind, you're like, okay. Then some other syllables don't make any sense, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, how all these things are put together, but there's a kind of a power to it anyways.
Correct. So, yeah. But the, it's taught as non-religious. So anyone can do TM.
Okay.
Okay. So that's it. So the words not having meaning is intentional without meaning. The sutras, and maybe I'm a revisionist in a way, I believe that there is meaning. We just don't know the meaning.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So if they are a mystical formula, which I cannot tell you how much I love that mystical formula of invocation, then those words are the syllables are used there to make that song. They're used there as a flavor to complete the dish. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so people have this mantra and they have this practice where they're doing 2 20-minute sessions a day, saying a mantra over and over again to help collect the thoughts and collect the mind and protect the mind. Because we said that's what mantra means. But the problem, here is the problem, right? John Stewart's former show on Apple TV that was pulled. The problem is that you are missing an opportunity. And I love analogies. So my analogy for this would be if you drove your Lamborghini to Walgreens to go buy your, you know, whatever, chips and soda. And then when you had to go on the freeway to visit your family, you drove in your Honda Civic.
Yeah.
You're missing the opportunity to have a good time. You know what I'm saying? And that, like, the transmission, at least in my opinion, and you know, we all have our various studies on, I mean you and I, and people who are listening to this, because I know this is listened to and watched, people have various inputs from their culture and from their religious practices and things that they have learned, you know? And so I'm not, you know, saying anything negative towards anybody, but the language in which I believe, the language in which the teachings were transmitted in that language on purpose, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everything is done on purpose, that fate, whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that language was chosen for that particular thing. English is not that language. It is not that language. And so doing a direct translation from something into English loses so much. Partly because the syllables that were chosen for that have resonance. These are seed syllables. They're not just letters, right? Mm-hmm. In addition, the way in which that you would make something like a dish, if there are herbs local to a specific area, you can use analogous herbs to make a similar dish, but it's not that particular dish. It's a similar but not the same dish. So when someone is practicing TM and they're using mantra, they're doing a really good thing by meditating and using mantra. But if they used a mantra that actually had meaning around it, the psychic meaning of the translation of that mantra can be imbued upon their body, number one. And given that we are like 70, 80% water, the vibrations from those frequencies will absolutely have a positive change on us, given the fact that, like, you can change the shape of molecules, you know, with vibrations, right? Just like sound does, because you're using sound to change yourself. So for me, it's close, but it doesn't come over the end. And this is not dunking on TM. It's showing the power of the tool of mantra if you use it in its full breath and what it can do for you. And that it is not, and I'll be happy to argue with Brad if we ever get him on about this, that you know, it does, just because he doesn't like it doesn't mean that it's not a powerful tool. It's actually, we are visual creatures for sure, but we are far more audio creatures, more audio creatures. And so the ability to use that stream of attention to trap your attention and catch it, eventually it'll be drawn back into the whirlwind that you're creating. And it'll turn back in and out of itself, and it will search for the source of itself at some point. I know that was a mouthful, but I'll let you.
Well, so I guess maybe this episode, because we'll have time limitations, what we'll be able to do, but maybe this episode wound up being like the one about like mantra.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So mantra as a technique of dealing with the mind that wants to torture itself, right? I'm really glad that you brought up that whole mantra means mind protection. That's was always like a striking thing when I first learned it, and I didn't think about it and put it in the notes. I'm so glad you did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the TM thing, I guess I don't know if I fully get it. I thought the way TM worked, and maybe it seems like you know people who know better than I do, obviously. I thought the way it worked was that they give you your own individual mantra. I didn't know it was like purposely, like without context or tradition or sense or meaning. I thought it was something that they gave you that had a richer thing, but I guess you're telling me no?
That's what I was told.
Wow. Okay.
And I have one long-term friend. I mean, I've known him for 17, 18 years. You know, we talked about it.
Mm. Well, again, I don't know what to say about it. There are people I know, like, say, for example, David Lynch, the film director.
Mm-hmm.
Twin Peaks and Blue Velvet and, you know, Mulholland Drive and, you know, these movies. He does TM. And so, I mean, I've listened to him talk about it a little bit. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's people I know who I kind of have a fondness for who do it, but I never really understood it.
Mm-hmm.
And I get your critique. Your critique is more like, well, hey, if you're going to do this practice, you could do Om Mani Padme Hum.
Correct.
Or do O Tara Tu Tara Tu Re Soha, or Tara's mantra. Or you could do some other thing that has much more resonance and meaning.
Which,
yes. You say an invocation, part of that, when you think about this, you're using your own mind. And then that's what Brad Warner was talking about. In a certain sense, your mind's weird thoughts can appear because it's being protected by the flow of activity that's this mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of awesome that it's like that. Subjectively, you can feel that. Like yeah. I've gone through ups and downs in my personal life within that last year. And I was like spending some time in Paris and I was trying to like clean my mind up in certain ways. So I just chose one of my mantras and I was using it like throughout the whole day as I was like traveling around in Paris. We're frozen, I think.
No, we're good.
You froze for a second. Are we still good?
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, we're good?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was just going around Paris. They were actually having like a harvest festival. Anyway, a little technical difficulties, fellow G&Ters.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was purposely using the mantra. You know, it's one of the ones I do all the time. I do, you know, sometimes when you take an empowerment in one of these things, you make a certain commitment to say a certain number of them every day. And this one I do probably like 100 and something a day or something along with the other ones that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Short, pithy. And I kind of like when I did the retreats in the Dalai Lama's monastery out in New York, they even make them a little bit musical. And I was like,
yep.
I'll put my own tune on it. It's fine. Whatever tune's in my head, I'll make it around Om Mani Padme Hung, you know?
Yeah.
It can be Om Mani Padme Hung combined with Seven Nation Army. That's totally fine. Oh, I can't do it off the top of my head. I wish
don't
I could.
Worry about it.
I'll practice it for next week. I'll fuck it up. But anyways, yeah, you can cross it whatever you want. You know, make it Purple Haze combined with Om Tara Tu Tara Tu Re Soha. Whatever song's in your head, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, you put the music behind it. And so I was like, I was going around Paris and I was like, wow, this is really healing, you know, and whatever funky thoughts were in my head and whatever was going on, I could see them getting kind of like shifted out.
Mm.
I kept doing it throughout the time in Paris. And I did it on my flight home, you know, and I did it when I got back to Chicago, and I'll do it like periodically when I feel like I need that mantra, that mind protection. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, it's just, you to share the subjective of it, right? It's gonna be like a really powerful thing, right?
Yeah.
And I guess what you're saying is then the addition is that when you tap on the one that has that energy, that gets to the invocation part, because in a certain sense, in that moment, you feel like, oh, I'm not just protecting my mind by saying things that are gonna distract it. I'm actually protecting my mind by bringing in sort of spiritual power and force that's associated with this mantra that's transcendent of myself.
Yeah.
That could be hard to believe. So I get it if people are kind of like, I could imagine saying something in my own head that protects me from my own negative thoughts because it distracts away or it fills up the space that I can buy in with. But I don't know if I can buy the idea that I'm also tapping into something else external.
Mm.
I get it. That's not always an easy thing to believe in. I don't know if I was like, you know, I was raised Catholic, so I had some sense of that. But, you know, you can have weird feelings about that, ambivalent feelings about whether you believe that or not believe that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose part of my upbringing was raised to believe in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe when I got away from that kind of religiosity. Maybe I got a little bit more like, I'm not sure if I want to believe in this anymore.
Right.
You know, so I can empathize with people who would be like, I don't know if I can believe that I'm tapping into some force called Tara in the universe, some force called Avalokiteshvara. What do I even know what that even means? You know, I could see that it would create some doubt in that. But I think that's where Jung was kind of helpful for the episodes last year, because he does say, you know, it's not just inside of you, it's outside. And there's that synchronicity between what's happening inside of you and outside, right?
Yeah.
It helps, you know. But that's the invocation part that they're referring to, right? You're also in not just doing something with your own mind, you're invoking a power that's bigger than you.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like when I can, I think what I, when I teach people this, even though I realize that like it's associated with a particular kind of, you know, deity practice, right? I de-anthropomorphize. How about that? How about that for a
That's a coinage. Roll with it.
Rolled. That is rolled. Yeah.
Keep going, my man. Keep going.
I de-anthropomorphize. Basically, I remove the deity from the practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I say is that this is a practice based on forgiveness or based on healing, right? And that is the energy, that is the psycho-emotional energy that we are tapping into. This being that is will be pictured here is an embodiment. They are the doorway, they are the reminder, they're the carrier of it, but it is not them specifically themselves of that thing. And so if you can share something with someone with love, right, or with the desire to be healing in your words, then you too in that moment are an emanation of Tara. The way that I try and relate people to do it this way, they can feel like it's not an external source, that it's the source within them. And thereby their words have healing, quote unquote, power, if you will. And thereby if I can get them to believe that or think that that's a possibility, then we could take the next logical step and say, okay, if you can use your words to heal, then these are just different words that are used to heal. And now you're repeating them in within your own head. And so you're tapping into that source of healing in a kind of a way. This is how I approach that hesitation.
Well, I mean, that's what, like, I think the Jung thing did. He said, well, let's make this inside of you. And then people go, oh, it's a part of me. Okay, cool. And that we can do, right?
Yeah.
Then I think the thing that happens, like, all I can do is share my own experience, right? That's what I'm trying to do. So as you go through it, a part of the, like, if you can get to the empirical part of yourself kicking in.
Yeah.
Right. The part that's like, okay, let me suspend disbelief. I won't judge this one way or the other. Right. I'll just do this thing. Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And this goes all the way back to me, like in my Zen days, because the mantra thing is like a lot of the chanting that they do, you know, in the Zen world too. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's chanting that you do. And some of it, they're mantras. You're chanting
mantras.
Absolutely. No doubt. They're even a little bit longer, but you know, they're ones that you're doing. And I think initially there was a part of me that was like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
Saying a bunch of shit in a language that I don't know.
Correct.
To do what? Like, what's this supposed to do? And the way it was explained to me, and we've talked about this a little bit, was like, and again, we're musical people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, these words have a musicality. These words have a feeling of a power. And you're saying like, that's why the words were chosen on purpose.
Yeah.
Which is what you're trying to raise, is maybe at least the question about TM, though, you know, we're not trying to bash anybody, but that's a fair question. If that's how it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it was told to me.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah. So when I first got this presented, I was like, okay, well, I guess I can buy in on that. You know, words have a musicality, have a rhythm, have a power, right? And then you just do it. And when you start to do it, you start to realize that this will, if you look at your own mind, you can start to notice, well, this is having an effect, right? Even though I don't know what these things mean, the feelings of these words and the rhythms of them and the sounds, you're saying seed syllables, right?
Mm-hmm.
These syllables that have a certain power to them, have this impact. And yeah, so there was a couple of in particular. It was one where they're trying to get you to overcome fear.
Mm.
And as far as a chant goes, it's a little bit pithier than like chanting the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra is a little long. It's a chant. You just go through and you do it. But this was a shorter thing where you do it over and over again, multiple times. And like, well, that's a mantra.
That's a mantra.
Right. And it was like supposed to be about overcoming fear. And like, I began to like say, well, does this help me overcome fear? And I began to realize it probably does.
Mm-hmm.
On some level. It does feel less afraid when you go and you do this thing because it has some power in it. And that's the empirical part, I guess, I was trying to reference, right?
Yeah, Eric. So I just looked it up. I looked up TM meditation mantra, and it said in TM, the mantra is a quote, meaningless sound used as a vehicle to help the mind settle down.
I wonder if they're just selling it that way because people would get a little bit funny if they knew there was supposed to be some other meaning behind it.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'll buy in if that's the thing. Well, then your critique makes sense on some level, right? I can understand it. I've never done it, so I guess I can't say from my own experience empirically. Yeah. But it is kind of a weird question. Why not do something that has more of a tradition and meaning behind it to create an effect?
Well, I think then that would be religious in its thing. But we could do a more deeper dive. This just came up sort of.
Yeah. But it raises an interesting question about the nature of mantra, right?
Right. That's the point of it is that this, you know, we love this mythical formula of invocation or incantation.
Yeah. So maybe the next, I mean, we'll have to wrap this up. Who knows where these fucking episodes are going to go, but this one went here. So, and we are trying to talk about things that could fuck up your life. And one of the things that could fuck up your life, if your mind keeps torturing yourself.
Correct. For sure.
And what you have is a technique about that mantra, mind protection, right?
Absolutely.
How do you start to learn how to do that? Well, maybe you learn how to do it by, to me, like I had to suspend disbelief. I had to go like, okay, I'm not going to judge this. I'm just going to do this and I'll watch my own mind and I'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even
and in this, if you just start to get the feeling like you're tapping into something outside of yourself, well, then you're Carl Jung.
Correct. And in this culture, we do have motivating force, right? I mean, what is a slogan? It's a mantra. Nike, just do it.
Yeah.
Right? There was a UFC fighter, Rose Namajunas. She's like, you know, famous kind of female fighter. And as she's walking up to the ring, she's saying, I'm the best. I'm the best. I'm the best. I'm the best. And then she totally knocked this other chick out, you know, who she was totally outmatched. And just head kicked her and dropped her. Then she's like, I'm the fucking best, you know? And she's like, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. But she kept repeating that to herself. And that, in that sense, that was her mantra.
Then the point you're making is kind of interesting though, because that kind of positive self-talk can be kind of awesome too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Eric, what was that guy on Saturday Night Live from way back in the day? He's like, he looks in a mirror and he's like, you're the best. You can do it. Everybody likes you.
Stuart Smalley.
There you go. Yes. Stuart Smalley.
You're good enough.
Yes.
You're strong enough and God, gosh darn it. People like you.
Yeah, there you go. That's it.
Yes. What's so great about it. There was one where he had like Michael Jordan on.
Yes.
And like, you know, he's there. He doesn't know who MJ even is.
Yeah.
So he's a guest on the Stuart Smalley show. And he starts going to Michael like, I know sometimes when you're out there and you're dribbling the ball and you're trying to like put it into the basket, you feel like I'm not good enough. And Michael's like, well, no, I don't really feel that way. Come on, Michael. The Nile's more than a river in Egypt. He does that thing to him. And Jordan can barely keep his shit together. You know, it's live and he's like going to lose it. So he's trying to hold it together. And eventually he's like, Michael, look in the mirror. Yeah, I'm good enough. I'm as good as those other players. Gosh darn it.
That's right.
He's like barely holding it together.
So good.
Yeah. All right. So I guess maybe ending the episode, like, okay, that's cool. And then, but maybe if you want to try a mantra, then the whole thing about the mantra is it has an energy, it has a feeling to it. It's been preserved down through the years. And maybe you do tap into something beyond yourself.
Yeah.
And maybe you just open your mind up to the possibility of that.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, thank great. I mean, unfortunately, I do have to go. It's a great conversation.
No, this is good. It's perfect.
You never know where this is going to go. And it's like, it's cool that it went to this place. So,
yeah.
Well, we still haven't finished number five.
Still haven't. And we'll probably do visualizations next week. So, you know.
Yeah, visualizations next week. But it is like, we're trying to get to the idea of like, what do you do? If your mind's going to torture yourself, how do you learn how to handle it? This thing that can fuck up your life.
What's even crazier, Eric, is that, you know, last year you were really keen on doing the love episodes. This is what I have been keen on doing for years like this. And now we're
okay, here. It's good.
Yeah, no, yeah. This is good. Yeah.
It's all about the love and the technique together, right?
That's yeah. correct. Yeah.
That's what the Kama Sutra is, love and technique. Ah, okay, we went there.
And then you wanted to do Tantra, so there you go.
We gotta talk about Tantra at some point. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, very cool.
All right, brother. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
and, you know, as always, everybody, thank you for tuning in, whether you're on the YouTube, you know, give a like, comment, subscribe, hit that notification bell, ding, ding, so you can get the drop when we do our drop, right, for sure, weekly. If you're listening to us, definitely, you know, leave us an email or hit us up on Instagram, Jin and Tantra, the Jin and Tantra podcast. Sorry, if you're emailing us, jinandtantra@gmail.com. And if you've made it to the end of the video, you are in the top 10% of attention. So I hope that we have provided you with some education and entertainment these last couple episodes, really, since we started on this thing. This is real shit. You know, like, this is not patty cake. We are not selling you anything. We are sharing deep technique that has been effective in our lives. And we hope that people take it and use it. And if you have any questions, we love to talk about this. You know, we would certainly be open to do something live if people were interested, you know, in doing like a Q&A. So, you know, whatever y'all are interested in, hit us up on Instagram, Jin and Tantra podcast, email jinandtantra@gmail.com, and the YouTube links, no problem. And if you know us personally, you can give us a shout directly. So we're open to all the things, as this is a passion project, but fortunately we are full of passion and other things. For Eric, this is Daniel.
Shit, I think, you know,
also, yeah, plenty of that.
Now we're doing the best we can not be.
That's really
we're good. Actually doing the best we can not to be. We want to be kind of like real in what we're doing. Yep.
Yeah, totally. For Eric, this is Daniel. We'll catch you guys in the next one. Peace. I want you to get together. To get together. I want you to get together.